RadioArchives.com presents The Insurance Murders, An Adventure of Dan Fowler, by C.K.M. Scanlon, read by Milton Bagby. In the days of J. Edgar Hoover's Untouchables, one lawman took on the super criminals even Elliot Ness couldn't touch. Dan Fowler, G-Man. The greatest FBI special agent of his generation, Fowler operated nationwide, hunting down spies, kidnappers, counterfeiters, murderers, and other dire threats to law and order beyond the jurisdiction of local authorities. Assisted by the youthful agent Larry Kendall and brave Sally Vane, Dan Fowler crushed crime with an infallible combination of scientific criminology and punishing Tommy gun lead. And now, Dan Fowler's thrilling adventure, The Insurance Murders. Chapter 1. Gun Harvest. A truck rolled into a small town in Michigan shortly before dawn began to spread its coral tints across the eastern sky. Two men were riding in the cab, both roughly dressed. The truck appeared to be heavily loaded, but tarpaulin screened the nature of its cargo. In front of an all-night lunchroom, the truck came to a stop. The drivers got to the ground stiffly and went into the place. They ordered breakfast and instructed the seedy little man behind the counter to snap into it. While the counterman was busy, one of the truckmen said out of the corner of his mouth,
"Across the street from the jail, a state cop's boiler. Stitch ought to know what to do about that. Ain't taking much chance with Dutch Hole, are they? I told the boss that the doc could never change his pan much. Dutch has a walleye that marks him wherever he goes."
"Georgie's wide awake, all right,"
the other man huskily whispered. "You see him over in the doorway of that garage when we pulled in? Just a traveling salesman with a briefcase and black satchel. And he's got a nice fast car all ready. Soon as we eat, we're working fast, feller. There's a little trip me and Angel Face have to make when this is over."
"Soft pedal on the gab," muttered the first speaker, a square-faced, foreign-looking individual. "Here's the eats."
He turned to the counterman.
"What's all the excitement?" he asked. "Police car in this one-horse burg at 6 in the morning?"
"This town ain't so one-horse as you think,"
the lunchroom keeper replied with civic pride, his eyes alight at the prospect of talk.
"We got a prisoner here that the Federals are coming after. Expect him from Chicago. The guy's name is Hole, and he was picked up here after that resort hotel burnt down about 10 miles from here. Million-dollar fire, they claim it was, and they say he set it. Funny, his picture was up in the post office when he went to the special delivery desk to get mail. They nabbed him, and they claimed they got plenty of proof he set the fire. But he won't talk. The guy's wanted already for a national bank robbery. That's why the G-men are coming after him."
"You know everything, don't you?"
the huskier of the two truck drivers growled at the gabby counterman.
"What's the damages for the grub, huh?"
"4 bits.
Tossing the money onto the counter, the men walked out of the lunchroom. One of them shot a glance toward the big machine they had left at the curb. He nodded as if to signal somebody and jerked the smaller man's arm.
"Watch it now, guy," he clipped. "This has got to go fast and plenty hot. Every man knows what he's got to do. G-men coming after Dutch, huh? They ought to have got up earlier."
With a short, brittle laugh, he swung up the steps of the Charles City Jail. Boldly, he walked up to the uniformed man sitting at the desk.
"We want to report a hit-and-run driver," he said. "Got his license here. He knocked a small coupe off the road and dumped a guy out. Happened about 2 miles from here."
"Yeah?"
the police sergeant said and reached for a pencil.
"Get down from the desk, copper,"
a deadly voice suddenly bit out.
"And hurry, or I'll blast you wide open. Maxie, watch that door."
Look here, you.